You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite movie star or TV personality escaped from the burning building with only a bit of snoot on their nose, survived a fall from a height taller than Olympic high diver would ever consider, or walked unscathed from the exploding airplane with nary a scratch? Body doubles and expert stunt men and women, along with some movie magic, keep the stars safe. But what happens when the personality's an animal? Who protects them? Beth Langhorst, a safety specialist for the American Humane Association, is one of a cadre of dedicated animal welfare advocates that you'll find on the sets of movie and television productions that take animal safety seriously. These productions are ones that proudly display the No Animal Were Harmed tagline. She'll be my guest today and will let us in on some of the behind-the-scenes safeguards that keep insects, tobacoderms, safe. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Go to PetcoDeals.com and get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off hundreds of items at Petco.
PetcoDeals.com.
But that's not all.
Are you talking to me?
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to AudibleDeals.com.
That's AudibleDeals.com.
The new Dyson AnimalVax are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. Go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com.
To order your Dyson AnimalVax today.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on awesome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Beth, thank you for being with us. I want your job. Oh my goodness, it sounds like you just have an exciting job.
I do love my job. It is very exciting. Every day is different on set, and you never know what you're kind of going to get into when you get there, and you kind of work it out when you're there. One day I can be working with 6,000 maggots over on a crime show, or the next day I'm working with an elephant or some horses, some dogs. You just never know what it's going to be. Every day is different and every situation is different, and it's just very changing and exciting all at the same time.
All right. Number one, we're going to get to the maggots, but how did you get this job? What's your background? Because it doesn't seem like it's something that you typically go to school and learn how to become a senior animal safety representative.
Actually, I have a degree in exotic animal training and management, and I got it at Moorpark College. It's a two-year program, and it has its own zoo, so you do get to work hands-on with the animals.
And that's in California.
In California, yes. After I graduated there, I did some movie animal training for the movie business, and I also did some zookeeping at the San Diego Zoo, and really enjoyed working with the animals, but wanted to be able to, you know, kind of make a difference also. And so I applied at American Humane and got a job here, and I've been here for 14 years now.
Wow. Okay. So you intimated that you had to work with maggots. All right, number one, I can handle almost anything in veterinary medicine, but it gets down to maggots. It's like, oh, those are really not so much fun to work with. But you have to protect their health. Tell me about protecting insects. What kind of insects and what do you do?
Well, with the with something like a TV show that's going to be using like 6,000 maggots, again, there they do a movie magic trick also. Most of the times they don't use actual maggots. They use a substitute, a wax worm, something else, because I think a lot of people still have the ooky figure with the maggots.
Mm-hmm.
And so working with a wax worm is a little bit better than working with an actual maggot. And wax worms are a little bit bigger, so they show up on camera a little bit better. But making sure that, you know, if you're in an environment, if you're on location and you, let's say you're, you know, the scene calls for a body, like a fake prop body covered in maggots, you know, you need to make sure that you pick them all up and take them all home. Everything that you came with, you have to go home with is one of our guidelines. And so, you know, a lot of these animals are not native to these areas anyway, so you wouldn't want to leave some and have, you know, something else start to breed and go around. So the trainers out there have ways, you know, they have little vacuums that they've created that do not have, they just have suction. They don't have anything spinning in them so that they can just pick them up quickly.
So you have maggot wranglers.
They do have maggot wranglers. most of the time, the maggot wranglers also are more of your reptile people. You know, they'll do reptiles and bugs and kind of the ooky things that a lot of people consider ooky.
Huh, you're right. I definitely would consider them ooky. All right. So now you've saved all these maggots and they have a fairly short, finite lifespan. They just let them continue on with their little lifespan until nature takes its course?
That they do. They let them, and those guys, actually, those trainers tend to, what they'll do is when they die of their own natural causes, they can put them in the freezer. And when the scene in the future calls for somebody wanting to step on something, they have one that died in the natural course of his own life that they just happen to have, and you can step on that one. But, you know, our guidelines say that you can't hurt anything. So if it's died in its natural course of life and you put it in the freezer and, you know, maybe 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, a year and a half down the line, you know, you can have them come out and say, oh, yeah, I've got a bunch of things that you can step on or run over.
Might have a little freezer burn, but it's okay. They're not going to
really
be
exactly. And you wouldn't really want to be opening their freezers. I'm sure they, you know, everything, a lot of the times, anything that they have that dies in the natural course, they'll throw in the freezer because you never know when you get that scene that they want to drive over a rattlesnake or, you know, have something come crashing down. And you can say, you know what, you don't have to make a prop one because you have a real dead one that's died in the own course of its life that you can use.
You're definitely right. We don't want to go into their freezers. So you've taken care of the maggots to the pachyderms. Where are you working with elephants and what kind?
Most of the elephant work that you will do is Asian elephants. And a lot of them, it's, you know.
And those are the ones with the bigger ears.
The Asians actually have the smaller ears.
Smaller ears. One of these days I'll get it straight. Okay.
Ears.
Okay.
The easiest way to kind of remember that is that in Africa it's really hot.
So they
need the
big fan.
To blow them and cool them. Whereas in the Indian areas that the other elephants live, it's a lot more jungly. And so you don't want this big flapping ear that can get caught on trees like that. So.
Thank you very much. I'll now remember that. Where did you work with the elephants in?
I've worked all around L.A. on locations, places, on stages sometimes. Sometimes you're at a million-dollar home using it for a location. See, I did a TV show called Bratz, or a movie called Bratz, where we had an elephant, and it was in a multi-million-dollar home, and they had this beautiful driveway, and so we had to avoid it with the horse trailer because the trailer that the elephant comes in is quite heavy, and so we had to drive it around so that we wouldn't destroy their beautiful driveway. But then just parked her and had a nice little dirt area for her to hang out in before she had to work. And walked her right up to set, and she did her bit.
You and I have had the opportunity to speak in the past, and you were saying that many times when you're on set, you pretty much control what a day is going to be like because you are concerned with the welfare and comfort and safety of these animals. So, for instance, I know that you were involved with Hotel for Dogs. What were some of the situations that happened there?
We had a lot of dogs on Hotel for Dogs doing many different things. One of the biggest challenges that we had was a big, long sequence with the dogs running behind a vehicle. The scene was that they were trying to save the dogs from animal control. And so they get this truck and they put hot dogs and all kinds of meat at the back of it. And the dogs were supposed to run after it. And we had 140 dogs running. We had to prep to make sure that the dogs knew they had what is what we call an A to B. They had a point A to start at and a point B to end at. And you have to make sure that that path is completely clear of any hazards and dangers and anything that they would hurt themselves on, possibly on the ground, hurt their foot pads. But we also had to separate the dogs in size differences. We released the big dogs first, and then the medium-sized dogs, and then the smaller dogs, so that the big dogs wouldn't overtake the smaller dogs and run them over. You know, although it was really fun to watch because the little dogs, small and mighty, would just want to catch up to the big dogs and run as fast as they could. And so we had to, you know, we had a precision driver that I had spoken to driving the vehicle and making sure that, you know, he had his areas that he could see and things that, you know, if any dangers, anything that happened that wasn't supposed to happen or wasn't expected, his instruction from me was just to stop the vehicle. If a dog, you know, the dogs were supposed to stay behind the vehicle, but if any of them came around to the side, anything like that, that, you know, we couldn't predict as the dogs were running, his instruction was to stop. And that is always the instruction, you know, just stop, let the dogs do what they need to do to run around and get to where they're going, which is their B point with the trainers and the treats.
Oh my goodness, the number of trainers that you must have had on set, because in my background, I've worked various times on set with dogs and cats. And usually it's one dog, one trainer, and it's like, okay, we're going to do this one scene 6, 7, 8 times because it's a pet, and they don't always do exactly what you wanted them to do. How many times did it take you to do these scenes? Oh, my goodness. And how many trainers did you have on scene?
For these scenes, we had about 40 trainers. It took us over the course of about 2 weeks to do the actual filming because we did use different locations to make it look like we were in different parts of the city, even though, you know, with the movie Magic, we were on a certain back lot or whatnot. We did some practical running in Paramount and some other stages. I'm trying to think. I don't think we did any actual running on real streets, though. We were always on a protected lot. We had 40 trainers, and they had prepped on site in these areas for about 3 weeks prior to the actual filming of these scenes so that the dogs kind of knew their point A's, their point B's, and they weren't hand releasing the dogs. We were releasing them in large puppy pens so that kind of one of the gates were open and they were released. That many dogs, you would, yeah, there's just too many to have that many, one dog, one trainer.
That just sounds like hysterically fun in one respect, but also you must have a lot of gray hairs for all the unusual situations that come up. Now, I also understand, and this is something, oh my goodness, Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't typically think, and sometimes in these movies, there are animals that are just kind of in the background. Yes, with Pirates of the Caribbean, they have the monkey and, you know, there's pigs and things involved too. But you've been on all of the Pirate of the Caribbean movies. Is that correct?
I have. I've been on 4 of them. Four. I had to think about that for a minute. Yes, I traveled with the show and went to all the locations that they were on. A lot of it was very tough when we were in some of the other locations. We also spent quite a bit of time on boats and making sure that the animals were acclimated to being on the boats. Not, you know, we had one macaw that got seasick, so he couldn't go on the boat. Making sure that, you know, since we were down one parrot because the other one couldn't travel on the boat and we would be out on the boat for 15 hours, would make sure that that parrot, because a lot of what he had to do was be on the shoulder, but he also had to do a lot of opening his mouth as if he was talking, making sure that he got all the proper breaks that he needed and the rest times. And a lot of times they would, you know, just make sure that I would make sure that, you know, he was getting his breaks and his needs taken care of and being able to kind of relax a little bit in his pen and not just continually be coming out. Because people think, oh, he's just sitting on your shoulder. That's not hard, but it's a macaw. It's on an actor's shoulder. He's moving around. The bird has to adjust to him moving around. And, you know, that beak is very business-oriented near an actor's face. And just making sure that the bird was very comfortable and relaxed and just acclimated to what he was doing.
How do you get the actors used to these animals? Because there are people, you know, you love a bird, you can work with it, you're not intimidated. But some people, and I've had clients come in who just the thought of a little dicky bird, you know, a small parakeet, a finch, oh my goodness, they can't handle it. Have you had situations where you have an actor that goes, oh, I can't work with a dog, but they need to work with a dog.
I have. I've had a few situations where actors weren't comfortable with the animals that they were working with. Some of them were not comfortable to begin with. You know, they just didn't know, maybe never had had a dog, and they were working with a rather large dog. And, you know, I'll always ask the assistant directors if we can get some time with that actor. Maybe just have him sit out on the lawn with the dog and feed him some treats. You know, let the dog kind of say that, hey, this is a good guy. This is a good person. This isn't a bad gig. I'm sitting on the grass. He's feeding me treats. You know, and that for, you know, in 5 minutes with that with an actor and a dog or something really gets that dog kind of keyed into that person. He'll kind of, you know, be more adept at going closer to him, having to maybe put his feet up on him. But just making sure that the actor is comfortable, because I have had it where it's maybe an exotic or something of the ooky factor, like a snake or something, where the actor's really, in 5-10 minutes, you're never going to get the actor comfortable with that animal. But some animals will pick up on that you're not comfortable. Horses.
Your body language, yes.
Your body language, things that you give off. Those animals, they can tell when you're not comfortable. So trying to get them to at least relax. You know, if the snake has to be draped over his shoulder, making sure that, you know, you get the time with the actor, which can be really difficult. And, you know, we have a lot of guidelines about prepping the animals and making sure that things are, you know, going to happen kind of the way you want them to be. My job is to look at all the potential dangers and see what could possibly happen. Not that it's going to happen, but what could possibly happen and how can we avoid that from happening?
Anticipating is so important. Well, right now I'm anticipating we're going to take a short little break. Come right back with Beth Langhorst. She is a senior animal safety representative for the American Humane Association, telling us all those ways that she keeps animals safe in the movies and television productions that we watch every day and don't even think about. So think about this commercial. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly. Right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Beth, this is just fascinating. I love hearing about all the situations that you've been involved with over the years. Now, if I remember correctly, you've been doing this for about 14 years. What's the one television production or movie that really stands out in your mind as being maybe the most exciting and then the most stressful for you? Maybe not for the animal, but the most stressful for you.
I would say in terms of the really stressful. A lot of the running scenes with the vehicle on Hotel for Dogs was very stressful just because there's that unknown variable. You can prep the dogs. I can see and make sure every danger has been cleared. But they're dogs. They're living animals. They have a brain. And sometimes it's not on the same page, and he wants to go left when you want him to go right. So for those scenes, it was very stressful for me in wanting, you know, making sure that I had taken every possible danger I could think of, every potential variable that would happen, and had a plan in action for that. And then the Batman show, I've worked on Batman The Dark Knight, and we had done a lot of explosions, and then they had wanted to pull the dogs back out for the scene. So I had made sure that production knew ahead of time that, you know, they could do all of their explosions, no problem. But all of that debris that was real debris, metal, glass, things that can cut pads of the feet, things that, you know, are not good for dogs to be walking on, that all of that needed to be cleaned up. And then they would have to set out fake prop glass stuff, which was actually kind of gelatinous stuff, things that won't hurt them but still give the look of the explosion has just happened, and that the dogs can walk on this stuff because it is not dangerous. And it took, you know, a good 2 hours on set to clean up all of that real debris and then put out fake debris that was safe for the animals to be around.
It sounds as though you have to have a very good working relationship with the producer, director in particular. How much pushback, because it sounds like what you're talking about, making movies are so expensive, and now here you are saying, no, you have to spend this time to clean everything up, you have to use this fake glass, which I'm sure is not inexpensive. What kind of pushback do you get? How do you convince them that this is the right thing to do?
One thing I found dealing with the production on that aspect, because it is a time and costly endeavor to clean up fake stuff or real stuff and put down fake stuff. If they're aware ahead of time, you know, I let them know a few days in advance that this was going to have to happen if they wanted to take the dogs out. If they didn't want to take the dogs out, then they didn't have to clean it up. But if they wanted the dog's feet to touch the ground, they needed to clean it up. And I made sure that when I told them that, I was very clear in the potential dangers as to what could happen to the dogs if they came out and there was real glass on the ground or a, you know, piece of contorted metal sitting there and the dogs happened to step on it. I find that if I can explain it to them with the dangers in mind and in ways that they can understand, they have no problem doing what they need to do to bring the dog out. You know, if they didn't want to spend the 2 hours, then they could have cut the fact that the dogs come back out of the cars. They didn't want to. They wanted the dogs to touch the ground. And because they knew of all the dangers that would potentially be harming their feet, they knew that they'd have to clean it up. And they were willing to do that because they knew ahead of time they could budget it into their day, prepare for it, have everything on set ready to go, and then just go ahead and do what you have to do. But it's a lot of times it's trying to work collaboratively with production on scenes that are really risky or dangerous or involve a lot of special effects and things like that, and making them aware of what any potential danger has been or could be for them. Because nobody really, at the end of the day, nobody really wants to hurt an animal on set. And so if you say, you know, this could happen or that could happen, you know, they'll go, okay, I get it. No worries, we need to clean this up, set down some fake stuff, and then, you know, we can bring the dogs out and they can run around and do what they need to do.
Is the American Humane Association the overarching group that will go into movies, television production? Are there other groups, or is AHA the end all?
AHA is the end all. We are the only animal group allowed on film sets. We have an agreement with SAG and AFTRA, which are the two main unions for filming, and they know that if they are using animals in any of their productions, they are required to contact us and let us know what they're doing, what their scenes are, and then we will go and cover the set.
So even television will have American Humane Association on set. At the end of a movie, you'll see the tagline, "No animals were harmed." But when you're watching television shows, sometimes even maybe some of these reality shows or commercials, how do you know that those animals were properly taken care of and protected?
Most commercials, we have what is called a sign-off letter, and it's basically, because it's such a short commercial, they're not going to have a tag like they have on a film that happens.
Okay.
But they get this letter, and then I believe that a review is put up, not necessarily for commercials, but for TV shows and such, a review is put up as to, you know, the intricacies of what's going on with it, done at a different department than myself. But the TV show, even though it won't carry the logo on at their credits, most of them still kind of earn that letter, but just don't carry it because their credits are already created and stuff. But you can always go, we have a website, and you can always go and see any of the reviews for any of the shows that we cover.
I was actually looking at the website, and one of the things that, and I'm not terribly surprised, that sometimes a movie in particular will intimate that they have one of your no animals were harmed approvals. In actuality, it's illegitimate. They don't have your sign off. How does somebody know, is this a movie that has truly earned it or not? Going to your site?
Going to our site. We do have, our wording is trademarked. And each of the end credits that are given out for each film has serial numbers to show what it's for. So we track it very carefully. So if there is an unauthorized disclaimer on the end of a film, we will find out about it and action will be taken.
For your 14 years of doing this, what's the favorite thing that you have about being on set with these animals?
I really enjoy the fact that every day is different. You never know what the day is going to hold for you. But the other thing is I enjoy talking to people on sets, the crews, and a lot of times, you know, when they'll just tell me, it's really nice to see that you're here. I'm really glad to see that you're here, you know, here protecting the animals. It's just really nice to see you out there. Always makes me feel great because people do look for our logo at the end of a film. And we don't just give that out. That is it. Productions go through a very strict process to get that. So if they've gotten it, they've earned it. And I'm part of the process of them being able to earn it and the fact that I'm on the set covering what every animal is doing, you know, writing down what's going on in the scene, what's going on around it, you know, what's happening in the background, if, you know, they're implying the animals off camera or whatnot. But I'm there. And it's part of it's the first step to getting it, but it's just the first step to being able to get that logo.
Sometimes accidents will happen. You just can't avoid it. People get hurt. Animals get hurt. Do you have veterinarians that are on set also?
We do. We have our guidelines, and most of our guidelines say, you know, in terms of vet care, that if you're doing stunts or if you're doing tougher stuff that day, we will require them to have a vet on set. Actively on set working, ready for anything that could happen. A lot of times, depending on what you're doing, you know, you just might be in an area where you'll have a vet office that's nearby on standby, where they're aware that, you know, you might call them if they're close enough, if you're not doing real big stunts. But just to let them know, you know, we're kind of in a remote area. Let's just let them know we're here and we might be calling. But we do have a lot of guidelines about the vet care on set. If, you know, a lot of times mostly with just the big stunts that we require them to be on set.
So can I apply for that job? That just really sounds like a lot of fun.
Long hours, but it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. Now, I know besides being involved as a animal safety representative, that you're also very much involved with Animal and the American Humane Association ambassadorship. What's that?
I like to think of it as that the one animal can relate for the many. You know, if you can, you know, it was like old shows, you know, you think Lassie and Rin Tin Tin and all these dogs, and it kind of makes people think, oh, you know, that's like my dog. Or, you know, you can get close to an exotic and it can, you know, this animal can make you more appreciative of the animals in the wild and the need for the conservation and the need for being able to kind of just help the rest of the species and that, you know, the animals are here and they need to be taken care of well. There's no reason to mistreat them or do anything of that nature.
How is this outreach of the animal ambassadorship going on? Is this a program that's being directed towards children or the public in general?
It's just that those animals can represent the other animals that need care and compassion.
I think it's important because sometimes people, as you were talking about these wild animals and exotics, if you appreciate the gorgeousness, their stateliness, going, all right, if I am not ecologically sound, if I am destroying my environment, it's not just my environment here where I live, but it can also have ramifications to other places too, like overseas, where this animal is from. So yes, I think that's very important. That's so important. For all the years that you've done, what is one animal that really has stood out in your mind that this is one that you've either bonded with the most or had the most respect for? What stands out in your mind? What one animal? Is there one?
This would be really hard to pick just one animal, but my favorite animal is the cheetah. And there's not too many in the industry working. So whenever I get to work with one, I'm very excited. But, you know, those cheetahs have a lot of things that you wouldn't consider because they are a big cat and they are an exotic, but they're very fragile. And you wouldn't realize that. You know, in Africa, they're the runners. You know, when they hunt, they run. They're the only ones that hunt during the day. They don't stalk their prey. They just basically walk
chase
right
out
and pick and chase it down. So they have a lot of things that can happen to them when you're doing things on set. Like if you're doing running scenes. Years ago, I did a Super Bowl commercial that was for Mountain Dew, and it had the cheetahs running. And it was like chasing a guy with a Mountain Dew on a bike.
Uh-huh.
So I had to make sure that those cheetahs got proper breaks, that they had a lot of downtime to recover. Because the one thing, you know, if you watch any of those documentary shows, you'll see the cheetah run, and then afterwards you'll see him blowing really hard. He's just breathing really heavy because it takes a lot out of them. And so I had to make sure that, you know, each time we said, okay, this was the run, we're going to get a half an hour break. And I was clocking it on my watch and getting a little pushback going, you know, can we go now? Let's do it again. And you're going, it's only been 22 minutes. I said 30, and I'm giving you 30. This animal needs to recover. He gets 30 minutes, you know, or 40 minutes, or whatever the time was, depending. But making sure, because they have a real tendency to get those sports types injuries, the ankles, the knees, the hips, the joints, because they are the runners. And a lot of those things you wouldn't think would need to be taken into consideration because it's a big cat.
Things that are just amazing. And you're talking about running maybe very quickly as we're kind of wrapping this up. Looking at some of the movies like War Horse, and you see these animals jumping over fire, running over uneven terrain, having all of these animals together makes me think of the Hotel for Dogs, having all these animals so close together, running, galloping. How do you protect them?
One, it helps to make sure that a lot of the animals, you know, they work together, that they get along. You know, all the animals have their own personalities, so you have to make sure that everyone's getting along and just make sure that they have the space that they need to do the action. If it's running together in a group, making sure that even though it looks really tightly packed in there, that each horse has, you know, his own little safety space that's clear of him and another horse. So maybe if they're running really closely together, they have, it looks like they're very tight together, and it's the perception versus the reality of it, you know.
So camera angle can make a difference.
Camera angle can make a big difference. It can make them look like they're packed in there super tight, super next to each other, really close together. But the reality is, it's a weird lens. It's making them do that, whereas the horse, you know, the next horse next to him is 4 feet over, 5 feet over. But the way that the angle of the camera looks is that they are right next to each other running together. So a lot of it is, you know, the movie tricks, the what we're doing versus what how it's going to look on camera.
So it sounds as though movie making now with regard to animals is so much safer than it was probably 20, 30 years ago when they didn't have all the special effects and the movie magic in the lens. Have you seen
Definitely.
A change in the 14 years that you've been a safety representative?
I have seen a lot of changes. And, you know, like with the perception versus the reality, the tricks have gotten bigger and better. You know, the digital world has created this whole new element, and we've had to adapt to these new cranes and camera cars and equipment that comes out, and making sure, and our guidelines are a living entity is how I consider them, just because they grow as the industry grows. As the new technology comes out, we have to make more specific regulations as to, you know, if you're going to run a car next to a horse, what's the distance that the car needs to be from the horse? If there's an arm with the camera on it, how far away that needs to be? Is it going to move? What speed you're going to go at? What speed the horse is going to go at? How many times you're going to allow them to do it total in a day? You know, it's like a lot of those running scenes. We don't just let them run the horses until they drop. You know, that's never going to happen. So we want to make sure that the horses get the breaks that they need. If they want to continually doing it all day, then they need to bring in multiple horses that look the same so that they can do it. You know, if you allow them 4 takes with that horse and you want to do maybe 20 takes, then you're going to need 5 horses or 6 horses or 7 horses to do it. That all look the same.
Does she have a little movie magic there? Let's get out our makeup people and now we can talk to somebody who does makeup for animals to make them all look the same. Beth Langhorst, this has really been exciting. As we wrap up right now, what does it personally mean to you, the American Humane Association's tagline, "No animals were harmed"?
Personally to me, it means that production worked hard to make sure that they were getting the disclaimer and that they were taking care of the animals on set, listening to the rep that was there, you know, listening to myself or the other reps that do what I do, and taking in what they say into consideration and applying it to the set and making sure that they did what they needed to do to earn it from us.
Beth, if somebody wanted to learn more about the American Humane Association and your type of work in particular, where should they go?
I think our website's a great place to go to find out more about us, how's our history and how we got involved in it, how it's adapted and changed over the years. We have a lot of the reviews for the other shows, and it just kind of gives an overall look as to what our company has done, American Humane Association has done throughout the years of the filming industry. So probably the website would be the best place.
And that's www.AmericanHumane.org, American Humane being all one word. Well, Beth Langhorst, thank you so much for being with us. I want your job, or at least be one of the veterinarians on set. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and you're listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner, and where you can watch some wonderful movies that have the tagline that are so important, no animals were harmed. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.